let's get started. So interactive fiction is a kind of game. So before we get into that, we need to talk about what is a game. So I am not really a game developer, and probably many definitions of what a game is, but I have tried to define it here. So a game is like you have a state, and then from that state you have choices which leads to other states. And that is a game, because it requires interaction. Then the next step is to define like what is a good game. So that's a more difficult question. So we need to like involve some more mathematics. So if we start by saying that the uppercase C is the set of all possible choices in a given game, and then we define f to be a function from this set of choices to the real numbers that calculates what we define as choice funness, such that the higher the number, the more fun the choice is. Then a good game is a game where f of C1 is equal to f of C2 for all C1 and all C2 in the set of choices. So as an example of this, we have this from before, but in this case, all f evaluates to 1, such that all choices give the same amount of fun. So for example, as an example of a game that does not have this property, you could think of a normal 3D game where, for example, you might have the choice to enter into a nice quest that gives you lots of funness, or you could also choose to just walk around in a circle that gives you less funness. So that makes that a bad game. And of course, this definition immediately disqualifies almost all existing games, but I think it's like a useful thing to aim for. So the next thing is, just to give you an overview of the games I play, to put this talk in context, so these are the 10 most recent played games on my Steam profile page. So there's kind of different genres, but I can see multiple genres, multiple games that kind of are in the genre of text-heavy and simulation-heavy. And then there are some other ones that are kind of more just action. But for example, this one to the left, Cinemaware Anthology, that's games from the 90s where they kind of try to make a movie. And it kind of failed. It's called Cinemaware or Bookware. It's kind of from that full motion video period in time. Kind of didn't work out. Interesting ideas. And then right here down to the right, we have Heaven's Vault, which is a super nice game. It's extremely text heavy, essentially a text game, but with some graphics added on to make it more editable for people. And the core gameplay loop in this game is to decode a human language, which I think is like a great gameplay loop. So that's kind of an overview to put things in context. So in this presentation, I would like to, so the background is, I would like to create a piece of interactive fiction that is a game consisting only of text. I've never done so before. I have kind of done a little bit, but not like a full-fledged game. I haven't really done much game development in general. That could be a pro, it could also be a con. I know of several approaches to get started, but I have never been able to decide which one to kind of go for. So I'm doing this presentation in order to force me to make a choice, which is funny because interactive games are also all about choices. So today I will cover single-player games, multiplayer games, and then I will try to think of applications of the underlying technology in non-interactive fiction, because maybe we can kind of spread out and use it in a general fashion. So about interactive fiction, it's kind of a very broad category. Kind of at the top, at the most obvious level, is text adventure games. Then we have choose your own adventure books. Some of you know these. We have visual novels. We have multi-user dungeons, that's multiplayer, but also mostly text-based. And then we also have mainstream games that have, for example, dialogue trees, and essentially everything that is kind of text-centric in those, maybe some mini-games, maybe some other stuff. So it's kind of broad, and I would like to maybe focus it a bit more today, just in order to be able to finish this talk at all. So there are some prominent examples of interactive fiction. We have Zork from the 70s, and kind of re-released in the 80s as well. We have The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was released as a text-adventure game by Infocom in 1984. Super hard. I have never completed it. It's a good idea, but in practice, it completely fails as a game, I think. Then we have Lambda Mu, which is one of these multiplayer games. And then I guess around 20 years ago, the commercial aspect of these games, 20, 30 years ago even, kind of declined. And since then, it has mostly been a hobbyist endeavor to create these text adventures, which is funny because that's also how it started. So it's kind of only around the 80s where this was a proper commercial way of doing game development. And then kind of starting again a bit now, but not in its pure form, kind of used as a side part to more mainstream kind of gameplays. In order to be able to focus in on something, you could say there are two broad categories of interactive fiction. There's the one to my left here, which is where you actually enter commands on your keyboard. For example, you enter drink beer, and then the parser says not understood. Then you enter go on stage, and then it says now you are standing on the stage. Then you can view your inventory, and then it says you are currently carrying an old laptop, and then you can connect the laptop to the display cable. That can also be expressed in a different format to my right, where instead of manually typing these choices, you are presented with a list of valid choices, and then you click on that. The good thing about this is that there are no invalid inputs. So for example, to my left, I had this drink beer, which was not understood because the game developer didn't implement that feature. Whereas on to the right, that just doesn't exist because it's not implemented. So the right version where you pick from a list is kind of more limited, but it also more precise, so you won't get into having to fight the parser. And for this talk, I will mostly focus on the format to the right where you pick from a list, because I think that's much, much nicer. The old left version was kind of hip for most of interactive fiction's lifetime, but I think the right version is becoming more and more popular. So to start with, let's focus on single player games. So I haven't, as I said, really been much active in this field of game development, but I was actually active once. When I was a child, I used to do much of this interactive fiction. So I guess about 18 years ago, I was quite prolific. So to give you an example of what interactive fiction is, I will show you something I did back then. It's a horror story centered around kind of my greatest fear back then, which was having to take a shower. So let's try to find it here. Yes. So we can try to run it. It doesn't work because it's a Microsoft Word file. So we have to open it instead, I guess. So this is kind of, you have some pages, right? And then the format is that, the format is that you have this step one and then some choices which leads to other steps. But instead of doing this manually, what we can do is close this one and then I entered it into a tool I made some a while back. Let's try this. It's in Danish, but I will translate it as we go along. We're not gonna do the entire game because even though it's short, I have lots of other things I want to talk about. So, okay, the starting page, right? When you start the game, imagine this. It says like, okay, you're going to your yearly shower. Of course, you don't want to, and you're really fighting this. You close your eyes and think about what to do. And then choice one is to try to escape, but my adults are probably too strong. And choice two is try to be clever. So, two fingers for two, one finger for one. Okay, I see, let's try to be clever. Then we click on this. Okay, what does it say? It says, cleverness is fine. You are waiting till you are in the bathroom. Then you hurry out and lock the door with the secret key, which hasn't been introduced yet, so that's kind of an interesting gameplay thing. Your dad yells at you and your mom says you are a lab thing went wrong. What are you going to do now? So this is actually kind of relatable because I haven't showered for a couple of days here at Bone Hack, so it's I get in the zone, I think this, right? So let's take one more choice and then we can continue. So choice one is go outside in the air and play. Choice two is go up and play PlayStation. One or two? I kind of see PlayStation trumping. Let's try PlayStation. You are sitting peacefully up in your room and playing GTA Vice City. But suddenly you can hear your dad's feet on the way up the stairs. What are you going to do now? Okay, let's stop this for now, because I think if we just continue, just picking some... Oh, you jump out, but you forgot that you are on this really high up in an apartment, so you die at the end. Okay, so that was a quick game, right? That's good, because then we can continue along. So the point of this was that this is a static graph of choices. So even if you reset it, it's not going to be widely different. We try some other choices. They are all statically defined. It's not a very interesting game if you try to replay it, or even if you just start to think about how it's created, because there's no simulation underneath. It's kind of boring. So there is this trend in games in general that you would like to do a remaster. I have noticed this, and I'm sure most other people have noticed this as well. So many remasters, so many special editions, the graphics are improved, but it's the same game underneath. So what I wanted to do today was to make a remaster of my old game, but not just to recreate it, but to, instead of having this static graph of choices, make it into a full-blown simulation, or at least start doing that. So what I mean by that is that let's go into my editor, and then let's create a new file. So there's this programming language called Prolog, which is really, really cool. Woo! And it's quite old. And the interesting part is when you say simulation, it's not really clear what you're going for. You're going for like old school 80s symbolic simulation of kind of objects, or are you going to go full machine learning? And I am not going to go full machine learning because I don't really understand it. So I'm going back to the 80s and trying to implement a world of facts that kind of correspond to the ideas in the original static graph of choices game. So let's start by defining the facts of this world. So we can say we have some parents, right? Oh, we can make some predicates. It's okay if you don't know Prolog, most people don't. It can be hard to learn, but once you learn it, the great thing is there's not really much to it. What you see is pretty much what's there. There's no extra hidden features. It's kind of just what it is. That's great. So we have two parents, right? And what else? It can also be useful probably to define what a person is. So a person is a person if that person is a parent. And a person is also a person if that person is you. That's what a person is. And now we can evaluate this, so we can say what persons exist. So a person can be dad or mom or you. So that's all the set of possible persons in this game. That's fine. The next thing is to try to define what possible actions do we have. So for this one, we will make a predicate called possible. So this, for a given state, how can we progress from that state to another state? That's what we want to define. So what do I have? Yes, so the point of this game is to avoid taking a shower. So let's say that it's possible for a person to take a shower. If that person is in the bathroom and the bathroom is locked, because if the bathroom is not locked, you will automatically escape from this. That's kind of the rules of this world. And a side note here, I think one of the things in many modern games is that you start playing it, and then at some point you don't know what to do, and then you have to exit the game and go to some kind of wiki, and then there are so many details on that, and I hate that. I want everything to be in the game, and that's what we're doing right now. We're defining everything from scratch, all the game world. So that's, I think, perfect. So we can kind of continue this. So now we have said that it's possible to shower. Um, But apart from that, we also have to define these new predicates that we kind of just assumed were present. So we can say a bathroom is locked if someone, if we have some person, and that person has performed the action of locking the bathroom. This might seem kind of obvious, but remember, we have to define every single thing ourselves. So there will be some obvious things, because humans don't think kind of in discrete steps all the time, but our simulation will have to do that. And you can continue with that. So we can also say that to be able to lock something, like to be able to do this thing that we claimed we want to do, if it's possible, it's only possible for a person to lock the bathroom, or to lock any kind of location, let's try to generalize it, if, let's say, that person has some key, and let's say that key locks the location. Oh, I've made parentheses too much. Yes. Yes, all right. And we can kind of continue along this, but I also want to cover other things today. So I cheated from home and made one like this. It's similar, but has more kind of content. So let's try to evaluate some of this. So imagine that we have this these lines of the world defining what kind of simulation we're in. And then our first step is to, let's say, check where we are. So we can query the world and say, where am I right now? In you where? And then it says completely, it doesn't know that. And that's because we haven't really defined the concept of locations. We have kind of said, like, okay, there's this bathroom location, but we haven't actually defined any location existing outside of the bathroom. So the beginning game state is just you exist, but you're not actually anywhere at all, but you can go to the bathroom. So that's kind of something you could add on, make a better simulation by actually having the concept of locations. We don't need that for now. We are kind of ignorant. So a more interesting query is probably to say, like, what do the NPCs do? So we can say, given the starting state, what will the dad do? Did I do something wrong? No, that should work. Unknown procedure. So Polar is quite fun, but it's also quite fun to debug it, right? So let's see. What if I just do this? Okay, so we can see that what it says, that we are querying what possible acts does the dad have, and the dad has the action, it can carry himself to the bathroom, it can carry the mom to the bathroom, it can carry me to the bathroom. Okay, so it's likely that the NPC will take the final action, let's say that. Oh, he can also grab himself, that sounds weird. Okay, that's the four possible actions. So let's say that it's this action. He wants to carry you to the bathroom. So let's try to introduce that as a fact in our program. So now that's kind of established. That's what he has chosen to do. And then we want to query, kind of think this as a turn-based. So now the MVC did something, and now we have to do something. And then we can say, possible, what is possible if I am acting? I can grab myself. I can grab the bathroom key. I can escape from bathroom. And it's important to note that these actions are only possible because we introduced this action up here of being carried to the bathroom. So if you try to comment that out, and again ask, like, what are my choices from the beginning state of the game, it will just say, oh, there are no possible choices. So it's important that we have this choice. So if you want to do the same thing as we tried to do in the playthrough just before in the old version of the game, what we're going to do now is grab the bathroom key. So I guess let's do that. So we enter this. You grab the bathroom key. Now that is done. And then I think we may have to remove some facts now. Let's see if it says so. Yes, we used to have this fact that the bathroom key was reachable, but now that we have grabbed it, we need to remove this. This is a limitation of Prolog. You can retract some things, but it's also a bit limited, and we are kind of abusing it. So what you would want to do is make a nicer Prolog-based system that extends this with some nicer features. Okay, so now there's... Did we fully retract this bathroom key? Yeah, that's fine. All right. So let's go on and then say what possible actions do we have now that we have taken the bathroom key? So, okay, now that we have the bathroom key, we have this new action possible, which is to lock the bathroom. What else can we do? We can still grab ourselves. We can escape from bathroom. So we could escape from bathroom, but it makes more sense to lock it first and then escape. So let's try that. Still manually entering it into the program as a new fact. So we make the actions of locking the bathroom, and then we make the action of escaping from bathroom. And now let's see, so we did a lot of actions, kind of unfair to the NPCs. So let's see what is the possible action for our dad. He can shower, he can carry himself to the bathroom, he can carry the mom to the bathroom. No, he shouldn't be able to do that. Okay, so clearly there's some logic errors here, but it's quite fun to debug these things because you're not traversing a static graph of choices, you're traversing this simulation which has state that goes to another state, and then sometimes you get kind of emergent behavior. You don't really expect that, oh yes, this action makes sense because it's entirely enforced by our system that this action is possible. And if you don't want that action to be possible, it's because we didn't manage to implement the simulation correctly. So it's kind of a combination of being able to do more things that you didn't kind of think were possible, but the system tells you, yes, this is indeed possible. So let's move on. This was 60 lines of Prolog, kind of buggy, kind of showing what you could do. To do this better, you would want to have a more full simulation where what you do is for each character you have, you give them a goal, and then they will try to achieve this goal by picking the action that gives most utility to that. That's also a very old idea, not really new in any regard, but it's easy to implement in these Prolog-like languages, and that's kind of the way to go. A couple of years back, 8 years or so, there was this system called Versu, which unfortunately isn't available because it was, there's a whole story about it. But they made a nice paper, which kind of put together these ideas of these emergent simulation-based gameplays. So you have this concept of contexts. So in this, to my right here, we have the context pastry, which contains one interaction possibility. Then we have other contexts, which also contain interaction possibilities. And then these contexts can be added or removed based on what you do. And the gameplay is mostly centered around very small human actions like blinking to someone or making an offside remark. And then all the characters are fully simulated, and there are two levels to the simulation. One is kind of a background state of the world that they designed and reused across different games, which contains like so many concepts of locations and emotions and so on. And then the top layer is then the game itself, which then builds onto this bottom layer and enables these characters to really do lots of things, because they also have to react to each other. So you can have like a reaction chain where you do something and then a character reacts and then another character reacts and so on. And the great thing is you can actually play as any of the characters because the system is built on a strong foundation. And it's kind of the same as I just did, but you know, more time and more development budget and so on. For Tree of Choices, this old school approach, there are some quite modern tools that extend it a little bit and also give a nice user experience. Twine is quite popular. There's this Ink language, and there's also something called Yarn Spinner, which seems nice. Then let's move on to multiplayer games. This is not something I play a lot, and when I do, I often find it quite hectic. So if at all possible, I would prefer something a bit like turn-based multiplayer games. The basic idea in regards to interactive fiction is to utilize the fact that humans are story-generating devices. So let's say you have two humans, then one human is saying something and the other is responding to that. So for example, this is my first attempt where I'm just trying to keep it as simple as possible. We have a yellow guy and purple guy, and yellow guy is the game master and he writes, "You see a lamp." That is then transmitted over the internet to this other person who receives that and then has to act on it. Then that person says, "Get lamp," which is received by the game master, who then says that the lamp explodes, which is then received by the player. This is kind of the simplest possible text-based multiplayer experience. The problem is that it's just chatting. There's no system in place. You can just chat, and there's nothing enforced by like a nice complicated system, which we like. It's also a problem that it's super lopsided. You have one person who is controlling the game and one person who is only responding to it. We would like something that is more balanced. Also the game master has, it's not only lopsided, it's also, the game master has too much power. So it's not fun and it's not balanced. So what we want to do is think about how can we kind of zone in on a smaller area in these multiplayer text games that we can actually explore. And I thought about this and I couldn't come up with anything. So there's this idea of trying to limit the surface area in order to get something done. So I was just kind of waiting around for something to happen to me. And then one day my friend Simon sent me an email saying that these .quest domain names are super cheap, you should buy one. And then I was like, oh yes, I'm going to buy one and use it for my project. And then I thought, okay, .quest, what is .quest, what can I do? And then I bought this domain and just have this nice Emacs web browser. So you can just go to, I bought this domain. Can I load it? Do I have internet? If I don't have internet, you can go to hest.quest. This is funny because it's a pun. No, it's not a pun, actually. It rhymes, and hest in Danish means horse. So apparently it doesn't load, but that doesn't matter. So I bought this horse website, And then I had to learn about horses in order to make games about horses. So the great thing is, I thought, okay, interactive fiction is such a big thing, and if you want to make a simulation of the world, that's such a big, big task. So I thought, now that I have this horse website, I can just make a very, very small simulation that only involves horses, because I'm sure that they are less complicated than humans. But I didn't know anything about horses, so I went to the library in order to find out what's a horse. There is this nice library next to where I live, and I have kind of biked across it like for 10 years, but never actually been inside. So I went entered and kind of looked for, I found this giraffe book, that's not a horse. Then there's a zebra book, it's kind of close to a horse, but not really. And then I found some really nice books and games. I kind of got distracted a bit. Oh, and then I found, oh, this is a nice plaque. So this one says, like, where is the book? So I kind of zoomed in a bit. And then you have, like, some useful topics, starting with H. And then I thought, oh, hest, that's horse, that's for me. Now I can learn about, like, what's a horse. So a horse is 63.61, apparently, on this decimal system. So I went to this, and I thought, oh, that's one. But there were no books. Really, there were absolutely no books on horses. So I was kind of devastated. I don't know what to do. Then I looked to the comics section, and I found this nice comic. I read this as a child, and I thought, well, I will borrow this. So it's called SOS from Bretzelburg in Danish. So I borrowed it. There's this nice self-service system on Danish libraries. It just works. So that comic I borrowed, it's, I'm not going to say this original title, but it's by Greg and Franklin. And it's actually the first release of that series in Denmark, but it's not the first, chronologically speaking, from the origin country. It's about fascism, and the most important thing about it is that it has a twist at the end. And that kind of made me realize, okay, when I'm making a game, I need a twist as well. The other day, the day after, I went out to see some actual horses. They are kind of in the background because I'm actually a little afraid of horses, so I didn't want to go too close to them. They're kind of strange animals. So I observed them from a distance, and what I realized is, like, a horse eats, I guess, sleeps, walks, runs, bites. So the great thing is that without learning about horses, we actually managed to restrict ourselves even further. So that makes it possible to make a very contained game. So I'm going to go through an example now. So my game is called Hungry Horse. This is a mug-up. The goal is that you are a horse, you are hungry, and you want to eat something. So in this game, it's similar to the example I showed earlier with yellow guy and purple guy, but now we are using prologue to enforce that nothing happens that cannot happen. So once you write down a fact, that fact is in the system and you have to abide by it. So first we say that you are a horse and you are hungry. That's what the game master says. And then the person who plays this game reads that and then suggests some new facts. So the yellow facts are always final, but the facts on this purple side are suggestions. So the player says that, okay, in order to eat something, that something has to be reachable. And in order for me to not be hungry anymore, in order for me to, instead of be hungry, to be full, I have to eat something. This ad here is kind of an ad hoc extension of prologue. It doesn't exist. It's to enforce that normally in prologue, if you have both the fact that you are hungry and you are full, they can coexist. We would like them to be exclusive, such that when you enable this fact that you are full, you will automatically remove the fact that you are hungry. That's, you can kind of implement that with some exclusive logic, but that doesn't exist in prologue. So this is So we are suggesting, the player is suggesting these facts that, yeah, you just have to eat something and then you're full. And then what's happened is that the game master says, fact not accepted, but here's a fact that I think is close to what you suggested, but something that I will accept. So the game master says that, yes, you become full if you eat something, but that thing you eat have to contain enough food. So we have this new enough food predicate, which is defined as that something can just be enough food, but it can also be enough food if it's similar to another thing, which is also enough food. So that's kind of some more levels to this. So that is now a fact. You can, if you, you can become full if you eat something that is has enough food for you. And then the game master continues saying, you are standing in a barn, next to you is a pile of hay. So the obvious step for the player is then to say, to kind of state that I think that this pile of hay is enough food for me. But then the game master can say, fact not accepted. And then the player has to think of another thing. Okay, the player just looks around, like, what else do I see than this pile of hay? And the game master says then, okay, you are standing in a barn. There's a small window behind you. You are surrounded by a short fence, outside of which exists the barn building. So I'm not sure about barn terminology. It's probably not called like a barn and a barn building, but let's accept that for now. So in addition, the game master provides some new facts that, okay, we have this new concept of a location, and you are apparently in the barn. And we say that there's a connection between the barn and the window, and the outside. And there's also a connection between the barn and the fence that has been mentioned, and the general barn building, barn area. And then, the game master also defines the concept of locations and how to be able to cross between locations, which we can kind of ignore, but the game master has to do this because the underlying system doesn't have a built-in concept of different locations, like in our first single-player example. Then the player tries to be clever. So the player has to define like what is height. You can say that something can be low or something can be tall. So the player defines that low is lower than high, and says that horses always jump high and the fence is low. That's kind of the claim that the player then tries to make and the game master has to approve. And then the player tries to define the act of crossing something by saying that you can cross something if you can jump over it and you are jumping higher than the object itself is. And the game master says, okay, that is fair. That sounds like how the world kind of works. And then the game master continues saying, you are in the barn building now. Around you are many barn cubicles. Again, not sure about the terminology, but many barn cubicles containing a variety of animals. And again, some new facts like, okay, this new location is connected to these other locations, and there's this tall barrier which is high, so you cannot jump over it because you have to jump higher than high, which is not defined currently. Then the player just kind of, this is something that horses do apparently, they just kind of neigh, and then the game master says, many horses reply with a neigh of their own. The collective sound vibrations destroy the solar lamp that has been lighting up the barn. So now there's a new fact to our world that the light is off. Then the player has to use this fact and says that, okay, we say that the concept of jumping only exists because we can see how high something is. So the player tries to convince the game master that I can jump to any height if I cannot see what I'm jumping a kind of across, which is a super silly idea, but we define this world. So if the game master accepts that fact, then we kind of accept it. And then the player also says that since this is a fact now, I hope, I want to cross this tall barrier because now I'm blind, and then I will eat lots of food. And the game master says, okay. And then now at this point, we can use Prolog or something similar to verify that this goal that we had from the beginning that we are no longer hungry but now full has been verified based on the facts that we have introduced during this gameplay. So our actions are completely enforced by the underlying system. I think that's great. It's not perfect, so you can think about some improvements. I haven't implemented this. That's a possible improvement to do that. And also, just to have a list of all currently active facts, like maybe some kind of to the right in a menu, such that you don't forget how the world currently works. That will fail if there are too many facts, but in most games, it should be mostly like some, not too many. You want to have more than two players. Two players is technically multiplayer, but you should be able to handle any number of players. Maybe make a library of reusable facts. There are many concepts that I think should be common, like locations and walking between them. You should have some dice rolls. That's a part of any game, some randomness. And it could also be nice to encode the flavor text inside the facts that have been introduced. That requires more work, and it's probably not super straightforward, but it would make sure that whatever the game master writes also has to be enforced by the facts that the game master provides. I think to cannot get rid of this lopsidedness, you could also make it such that the player and the game master play two games at the same time, such that they exist in the same world and are affected by the same facts. So we reach some kind of balance. That would also be more difficult if you have more than two players, but you should be able to engineer something. Okay, so the next and final topic is applications of these simulation things that I have talked about in non-interactive fiction. So I'm thinking about books, films, theater, you name it. Anything that doesn't require interactive action from a user. So let's see. I want to talk about, yes, the other day I was walking this nice dog. I couldn't decide which picture to show here, so that's a couple of. So I was walking this dog and I meet someone on the street who just starts talking to me. This happens. And he mentions that he also knew a dog like this, and the owners of that dog moved to New Zealand because they were producing hearing aids, and hearing aids are quite big in New Zealand, he told me. And that was like, okay, fair enough. Then he went on to tell me that he just got a girlfriend who is a model and knows another model, and I thought, okay, interesting, but what does this have to do with anything, and why are you talking to me? So at this point, he had kind of provided me with different backstories, and I was very eager to get to the punchline, the conclusion of this story. And he just kept talking, and I was just, what is the conclusion? It was also awkward because I couldn't really participate in this conversation because I didn't know New Zealand or models really well. And then he says that I want to take my girlfriend to New Zealand. And I thought, well, technically these facts are connected, but there's no immediate narrative link from the above facts to the final conclusion. It was so confusing for me. And I just went home and I was just confused by like for the rest of the day, because let's try to make a diagram. So the facts are that he has a girlfriend who is a model, and has a friend who is also a model. New Zealand has at least one Siberian Husky dog, which is, okay, there's some error in the diagram, but New Zealand has many hearing aids. That's what we know, right? So the goal that he presented was, he wanted to take his girlfriend to New Zealand for some reason, and this is the narrative jump that he presented that I did not understand. And I thought, maybe if you try to generalize this, so why would you like to take a person to a location? That's because maybe person is from location. So it could be that his girlfriend was from New Zealand, but then why did he talk about dogs? because I kind of imagined that, okay, you need to use all these background facts and tie them nicely together at the end. So the other option is that New Zealand has some kind of nice attribute. For example, it has a dog or it has hearing aids, and you like hearing aids or dogs. So that's kind of what I thought, but none of it really made sense. So I thought that was a nice way to think about things, but it was also kind of a complicated story. So I'm trying to present instead a simpler story now to make it less complicated in order to talk about what we actually are going to talk about. So my simpler story is, we have a human who discovered fire. The human learned that the fire improves the food. Then the human accidentally burned themselves to a crisp. And the final step, which is the twist, is that the human was eaten by a hungry horse. So we have this four-step story. And as before, we can try to put it in a diagram. So we have at the top kind of the conclusion, the human was eaten by a hungry horse. And then there are several links to earlier facts from that. So he was eaten because he is food. And he was eaten by the horse because the human is good food. Because the fire improves the food, which is in this case the human. And this is known because the human discovered fire. And it's known specifically because we are kind of the all-knowing reader. So in the story, only the human technically knows this, but also if you read the story, you also know that. So on the left side, we have that the human burned themselves to a crisp, which is possible because the human discovered fire. So this is kind of a high-level diagram of the story containing the four points. But we have to make it more precise in order to kind of think about any underlying generalized things. So let's try to remove some of the weird English things about articles and past and present, just make the sentences simpler. We have like a nice diagram here where we kind of say that a horse eats the human, and the horse specifically eats because it's hungry, and specifically eats the human because the human is good food, and the food is good because the fire improves the food, which is known because the human discovered the fire. And we can extend this diagram work in more, even more fine grains by having some more arrows around and saying that the human is dead because the human used the fire to burn the human to death. And we can also say that discovering fire is kind of similar to learning about something. So let's try to use fewer kind of verbs. So we just say that discover and learn is the same word. But this diagram is still kind of not super useful on its own. So we should go back to our prologue and try to make it nice and text-based as we like it. So we should have simple textual encodings of the background facts and of our story. So I made something. Oh, the website loaded. That's nice. So let's go to this one. So I wrote some prologue. And let's try to make some queries. So I won't go into detail with this specific file, but what we have here is, again, this possible thing, which tells us what action is possible during, according to what state we are currently in, and some other background things that we need to know. So the first step to replicate, so we want to replicate the story that we provided. So the first step that is to state that we have a human, which is alive. Oh, sorry. So we have to actually do it in here. And the next thing is the first sentence of the story was that we make the subject, verb, object, where we say human, learn, fire. That's our simplified English version. Oh, again, I am entering it in the wrong place. So now that is a fact. And then what we want to do, the next fact is this subject verb order of human learns And then the human, this is the point where the human learns that the fire improves the food. So to encode that in our product system, we say that human learn, then we make a new subject verb object that fire improve food. But instead of just entering this, we have to make sure that it's possible according to our system. So we query this system, say possible, and says that's true. Okay, so that's nice. So we can enter that again because it's okay. Then the next thing that happened in the story was that the human burned themselves to a crisp, and there are so many details and flavors to that specific sentence, but we are simplifying it and saying that subject, verb, object, human, burn, human. So we want to say, is this possible? And it's it. But what if, so what if we hadn't introduced this fact before that the human learned that fire improves the food? No, specifically this first one, that the human learns the concept of fire. Let's try to comment that out. What is the comment syntax? That is. So now we have commented out the first part of the story where the human learns the concept of fire. And then we try again to check if the third thing is doable, that the human burns themselves. And it's false. So we have enforced to our system of facts in Prolog that we cannot make any continuity errors. So let's go back to this and then let's enter this new fact to our system. And then the final thing that happened, was that the human dies, right? We can say, is it possible that subject verb human dies? That is possible because the human has burned themselves. So again, if we try to comment this out and try to again query the human dies, that is not possible because the human can only die if the human has burned themselves. Or some other underlying fact. So we have it actually up here that that there are many ways to die. And you can say that you can die if you're currently alive and you are now very old. You can die if you are currently alive and you're very sick. Or you can die if you're currently alive and someone burned you, in this case yourself. So we are describing how to die in this world. So let's have that as well as a fact now, now that we know that this is okay, this is possible. And then let's state that we have a horse also who is alive. And then the final part of the story is to check whether it is possible for subject verb object, the horse, to eat the human. Oh yeah, so this is not possible. And why is that? That's because we haven't introduced the fact that the horse is hungry. So the horse can only eat people if it's hungry. So let's try again. Is it possible for eat the human now that it's hungry? And yes, it is. So we can encode that fact as well. And now we have completed our story. And for each new sentence that we wanted to add to this story, we made sure that it was not breaking any continuity, not breaking any facts about our world. And that's, I think, like a super great thing. I think you could use this for movie scripts and so on. You could support flashbacks. So my story was quite simple, right? Four steps, all in order. In modern stories, you want to have maybe some switching around of time and place, flashbacks, flash forwards. You could support that by extending our system to have like a predicate that says you have this, you have some kind of reverse where you take the order in a different order, and but you maintain the same facts and the same relations with them and make that equivalent with something in the original order. I think that's doable. So that's kind of what I thought about. In the end here, now I want to talk about some other applications for this. Machine learning, I didn't take the statistics course at my university because it seemed difficult, but I think machine learning has come quite a long way, and it's possible to use it quite easily, I think, at this point. So I wanted to do something that's this WordNet, which has relations between words, and I wanted to create a system that explores character attributes and presents you, the creator, with different different kind of scenarios for your characters and different choices based on those scenarios, and then you have to pick the choice, and then the system generates character traits based on those automatically generated choices. So you define the character, but you are defining it by throwing the character into unknown situations. And I also like to just experiment these applications on real movie scripts, try to encode those properly. That could be fun, but also lots of work. Finally, some free ideas for game topics. I went to the baker once, and then they asked me if I wanted a voucher, and I didn't really respond. It was kind of confusing. Maybe that is a game. Also, I was at the cinema watching a movie, and then this random dude talked to me, and I didn't know how to respond. Maybe that's a game. And also, I have this concept of having too many side projects and never finishing any of them. So maybe the game you would have, like, the goal would be to finish just one side project, and then you would have, like, constant things coming in your way, kind of stopping you, and that could be fun. Also, what about an inverse game where the game is presenting you with parser input, and then you have to respond, and then something else exciting happens. In conclusion, I think the main degrees of freedom that I'm interested in is this, either it's parser-based or it's choice-based, either it's a static graph of choices or it's a simulation, or either it's single-player or multiplayer. And I am probably picking like a list of choices, a simulation, and single-player. I think that's what the game I'm making will be. I think text-only development is great because game development should have as few obstacles as possible, and making graphics is time-consuming. I think writing is fun, so that makes it fun to make the game. And it's easy to really do effective iterative development because you can just move text around and you can have systems in place that guarantee that you're not doing something that is invalid within the game world that you're trying to define. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions for Nils? Well, there's one all the way down there.
Could you have a prologue say that the horse needed to be hungry to like enable a solution at that point?
Yes. Yes, indeed. You can just say that this particular state of horse is hungry. That state can you can make it even more complicated. You can say that state can only exist if we have if we introduce a concept of time, and there has been so much time since the horse last ate, such that we don't have this explicit state, but we have a set of actions describing what actions the horse did in the last 24 hours, and if it didn't eat as part of any of its actions, that would constitute it being hungry. I didn't respond to your question, I'm sorry, I just thought of something else. But yes, for sure you could do that, and you could do so many more things.
Do we have any other questions? Then let's give a big round of applause for Nils.